Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Davis, minister of the 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation out of the 12th Hour, Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is October 27, 2017, or the Lord Day 2021. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, Just What I Needed Most. Just when I need Him, Yahshua is near. Just when I falter, just when I fear, ready to help me, ready to cheer, just when I need Him most, just when I need Him most, just when I need Him most, Yahshua is near to comfort and cheer. Just when I need Him most, just when I need Him, Yahshua is true, never forsaking, all the way through, living for burden, pleasures of new. Just when I need Him most, just when I need Him most, just when I need Him most, Yahshua is near to comfort and cheer. Just when I need Him most, just when I need Him, Yahshua is strong, carrying my burdens all the day long. Oh, all my sorrow, giving a song, just when I need Him most, just when I need Him more, just when I need Him more, Yahshua is near to comfort and cheer, just when I need Him most, just when I need Him, He is my heart. Answering when upon Him I call, tenderly watching lest I should fall, just when I need Him most, just when I need Him most, just when I need Him most, Yahshua is there to comfort and cheer. Just when I need Him most. Esau and Jacob, Part 2, Seven Rod, Volume 1, page 61. Our title for our subject today is Mothers of Israel. But note that Jacob went to Padan Aram unto the house of Bethuel, his mother's father. There he married Leah and Rachel, the daughters of Laban, Zilpha and Bilhah, the maids of Leah. And Rachel also became his wives. These are the mothers whence the 12 tribes came, but they are only the mothers in type of the true tribes. 144,000. Leah was the only legal wife unto Jacob. Rachel was her sister. Zilpha and Bilhah were bondwomen. That Leah represent the true church of the Yahshua, Seventh-day Adventist. Rachel, a sister church, but not the true Protestant. So Rachel represents the Protestant churches, the protesters, the Sunday-keeping world, as we call them today. Zilpha and Bilhah represents the world, religious and irreligious. These are the mothers of the 144,000, and the way they, the 144,000, are gathered. So while the tribe, 12 tribes came from many mothers, they were begotten by the same father. So with the true 144,000, while they are gathered from all churches and the world, they must be brought into one church at the same period of the church's history by the same message, the third angel's message. Jacob homeward bound, time of trouble. At the end of 20 years, Jacob was homeward bound to the promised land, and his father's house was a great possession. By the time he arrived at his father's house, he had 12 sons, heads of 12 tribes. Before Jacob entered his father's house, he went through that terrible struggle and wrestled with the angel till the breaking of the day. Genesis 32:24-29. Jacob wrestled with the angel typifies the time of Jacob's trouble for the church. We read in early writings, page 36-37, a decree went forth to slay the saint, which caused them to cry day and night for the deliverance. This was the time of Jacob's trouble. See also Patriarchs and Prophets, page 202-203. Type of the promised land, Israel in the Father's house. If the promised land of Canaan is a type of the promised heavenly Canaan, then Jacob's father's house is a type of our father's house. Just so when Israel, the true, enters our father's house in the heavenly Canaan, there will be the 12 tribes, 144,000. The question arises, are these all that will be saved in the third angel's message? Remember that when Jacob entered his father's house with his 12 sons, he had many servants, male and female, that outnumbered his tribes, sons many times. Just so with Israel the true, who will have with them a great multitude, which no man can number, Revelation 7:9. The great multitude came by the effort of the tribes after the fulfillment of Ezekiel 9. This study cannot fit another case or any other congregation in all the history on the earth. Seventh-day Adventists are the only people and congregation that has ever been called Israel who have the truth of the health reform, and that would be in the danger of selling their birthright for a bowl of pottage. By this fact alone, while there are many others, we may know that the Seventh-day Adventist Church is Yahweh's church. Brother Johnson and Lamette's wife, they had no health reform whatsoever. They didn't teach health reform, and they didn't practice any form of health reform. We know, and he represents the closing work for the Seventh-day Adventist Church as the last prophet put in charge of the candlestick of Laodicea. By that, we know that the Adventist Church completely linked hands across the gulf with the medical profession and completely apostatized. The last prophet for spiritual Israel, the Adventist, showed that the Adventist Church had completely apostatized on health reform. Who is Israel by the promise? That's our next subtitle. This experience of the Israelites in departing from Egypt was written for the instruction of those who should live in the last days, before the overflowing scourge shall come upon the dwellers of the earth. Yahweh calls upon all who are Israelites indeed to prepare for that event. Volume 6, page 195. The 12 tribes of Israel after the flesh are but a type of Israel by the promise, the 144,000. Now this promise, this word promise is something that goes along with the word oath, the two in which Yahweh is impossible for him to lie. When he gives something by promise, it will happen. As there were Gentiles among Israel the type, there would be Gentiles in Israel the true. The early part of the apostolic congregation could not be called Israel, for the history of the congregation then was typified by the Isaac, according to Galatians 4:22-31. Now let's read that again. For the early part of the apostolic congregation of Israel could not be called Israel. For the history of the early church then was typified by Isaac, according to Galatians 4:22-31, as explained on pages 53 and 54. Yeah, that would be before the cross. Isaac was not called Israel, for he was the father of Jacob, and it was Jacob who was called Israel. Therefore, Israel, whatever part of the church it is, must come sometime later in the history of the church. Jacob was the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. And if Israel after the flesh is a type of Israel by the promise, the truth, then let us state the beginning of the Israel after the flesh, if we are to locate and to know of Israel by the promise, the 144,000. The journey of Israel down into Egypt could not have been an accident. Whatever the reason for it, Yahweh was in it. For the Joseph said unto his brothers, Genesis 45:5, Now therefore be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves, that ye sold me hither. For Yahweh did send me before you to prepare to preserve life. Joseph declares that Yahweh was the cause for him going into Egypt. Yahweh had also told Abraham that he and his seed would sojourn and be afflicted in a strange land for 130 years. But why did Yahweh send them into Egypt? Why was Joseph sold at the age of 17, merely a lad, into the hands of the cruel Ishmaelites, and led to a strange land to be resold as a slave? We certainly would not make a mistake by thinking that Joseph became faint-hearted on the way. There surely must have been a reason for all the ill treatment. In Egypt, Joseph was sold to serve as a slave and later was thrown into the dungeon for a number of years. Why did Yahweh lead Israel into that strange land where idolatry prevailed everywhere? Yahweh certainly knew that in that land, they'd become slaves in just a short while. Why would heaven allow Yahweh's chosen people to become servants unto a nation whose idols were their gods? Why did Yahweh permit the lashes of the Egyptian taskmasters to be applied unto the backs of his people? Why would divine love permit the children of Abraham, Yahweh's friend, while yet in infancy, to be drowned in the river Nile? Who can say our great Yahweh was ignorant of all these sins which took place, or that he made a mistake? The only answer that can be offered is that it was all heavenly design. But what was it all about? Yahweh must have had some special reason and specific purpose for an object lesson to be taught at a certain time. One may say Yahweh did it all to show his power. But would the all-wise and great Elohim, full of love and mercy, destroy his children to show his power? Not even an earthly, mortal, human father would dare destroy his children to show his power. Who would dare say human beings have greater love or better judgment than the great Yahweh, whose mercy is immeasurable, whose love fills the universe with wisdom and is unsearchable, whose judgment is justice? Not only his chosen suffered of bondage and cruelty, but the Egyptians as well. At the time of the Exodus movement, at the departure of the Israel, the plagues came upon all Egypt, and the nation was nearly ruined. On the night of the Passover, there was death in every dwelling where there was no blood on the doorpost, and in every stall of beasts. And all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sitteth upon the throne, or his throne, even unto the firstborn of the maidservant that is behind the mill, and all the firstborn of the beasts, Exodus 11:5. Israel journeyed unto the Red Sea, and Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the waters were divided. Israel went into the sea and walked across over dry ground, for the Egyptians pursued after them into the midst of the sea, and Moses stretched his hand over the sea, for the waters returned and covered the chariots, horsemen, and all the host of Pharaoh which came into the sea after them. There remained not so much as one of them. Israel came into the wilderness where they wandered about for 40 years. Thousands of them perished because of the unbelief. At the end of the wilderness journey, the people crossed the Jordan during the time Israel was away from the Canaan. The land was thickly inhabited by the heathen nation. Israel was compelled to destroy them by the sword in order to possess the land. Think of the loss of life, grief, and suffering, all because Yahweh took Israel into Egypt and brought them back again. Yahweh certainly would not destroy his subject just to show his power. 1 Corinthians 10:11-12, speaking of the experience of the children of Israel, we read, Now all these things happen unto them for ensamples, and they are written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. If we are the people upon whom the end of the world is about to come, and their examples are written for our admonition. This is the reason why Yahweh led the children of Israel into Egypt and back again. Think how great the prize to work out the scripture, for the lessons to be derived from these great examples are far greater than we have ever realized. Many thousands lost their lives to produce the picture, with the intention that many more thousands would be saved than those who perished. Let us therefore carefully study into the lessons that were intended for our learning and admonition. Pharaoh drained, and behold, he stood by the river. And behold, there came up out of the river seven well-favored kine and fat-fleshed, and they fed in a meadow. And behold, seven other kine came up after them out of the river, ill-favored and lean-fleshed, and stood by the other kine upon the bank of the river. And the ill-favored and lean-fleshed kine did eat up the seven well-favored and fat kine. So Pharaoh awoke, and it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof, and Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none that could interpret them unto the Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. Then Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Pharaoh told the dream to Joseph, and Joseph said unto Pharaoh, Yahweh has showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good kine are 7 years, and the seven thin and ill-favored kine that came up after them are 7 years. Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, and there shall arise after them 7 years of famine, and all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine fallen, for it shall be very grievous. And in the seven plenteous years the earth brought forth by handfuls, and he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the city, the food of the field, which was round about every city, laid he up in the same. And Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea, very much, until he left numbering, for it was without number. Genesis 41, 1 to 49. We shall endeavor to bring enough evidence in this study to show that Israel's experience in Egypt is a photograph of Israel, the true 144,000 in the Seventh Day Adventist Church. While the Exodus movement is a great movement, the Second Advent movement will be still greater. For Yahweh will take out a people, not from one nation only, but from every nation under heaven, and he will lead them into the heavenly Canaan. This Advent movement, of which the Exodus movement was a type, we believe was foretold in the prophecy in the following stirring language, that it shall come to pass in that day, that the Yahweh shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people, which shall be left. There shall be a highway for the remnant of his people, like as it was to Israel in the day that he camped out of the land of Egypt. Review and Herald, October 10, 1929, pages 4 and 5. The Exodus movement is in a way a type of the closing work of the Yahweh under the Advent movement. Each movement rises in the fulfillment of the time prophecy. Certainties of the Advent movement by W.I. Spicer. For the fact that Israel, after the flesh, is a type photograph, their experience must be duplicated by the true. Otherwise, there can be no type. So we know that Adventists lived out the antitype of this Israel by the flesh until they came to their end, and it came to their end in 2003. So that must have ended. 2003 must have ended a 430-year antitype of Israel's sojourn down in Egypt. So as we well, I say 2003. We still haven't had the harvest of the 144,000 and the separation yet in reality. Year of the plenty and famine. Yahweh permitted the plenty as well as the famine. Each time Each one bears the number 7, meaning perfect or complete. These two sections of time can only mean one thing, which is none other than this world in history in two great divisions, namely B.C. and A.D., with the cross as the dividing line. The 7 years of plenty represents the Old Testament period in which time Yahweh gave plenty, for by His holy prophecy stored it in the great storehouse that we today call the Bible. In Matthew 11:13 we read, "For all the prophets of the law prophesied until John." It is for this reason that Yahshua made the above statement, "For we have no other thus far." In the 7 years of plenty B.C., Yahweh stored His word in the Bible to feed the world, Egypt. In the next 7 years of famine A.D., Yahweh, through His sundry times and in divers manners, spake in times past unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by His Son, whom He hath appointed heir of all things, by whom also He made the world, Hebrews 1:1-2. The New Testament is a fulfillment of the Old. Joseph, type of the Messiah, Yahshua. Joseph typified Yahshua. See Patriarchs and Prophets, page 239. Our Elam in the Old Testament, a time 7 years of plenty, spoke unto His people in the divers manners by His prophets, and commanded these things to be written, with the intention to speak unto His people in these last days, the New Testament time, or 7 years of famine, to each one of us individually by the voice of His word is found stored in the Scriptures. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, "See, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt." And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried before him, "Bow the knee," and he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, and without thee thou shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." Genesis 41:40-44. No greater favor or honor could Pharaoh have shown unto Joseph. And all the Egyptians bowed down unto him, and as we proceed in this study, we shall prove beyond a doubt that Joseph is a perfect type of the Yahshua. Pharaoh type of. If the Joseph typified Yahshua and Pharaoh honored Joseph above any man ever honored by any king, and Joseph and Pharaoh worked hand in hand, then Pharaoh must stand for some figure or type. It would not be hard to determine what Pharaohs represent. That of which honors Yahshua above everything that can be honored upon the earth is what Pharaoh represents. For the congregation of the apostles honored the Messiah, Yahshua, above everything that can be honored, so much so that all sacrifice of love for no greater homage has Yahshua received upon the earth by any other part in the history of His church. By this we understand that the Pharaoh represents the apostles, our organization, or the church organization. The application made here will prove correct as we advance in this study. Further explanation upon this subject is given on the last page of this section. The beginning of the famine. For the dividing line between the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine is the cross. For all the prophets in the law prophesied unto John in Matthew 11:13. Where the 7 years of the plenty end, the 7 years of famine begin. The first year of the famine is the beginning of the congregation of Yahshua at the time of the apostles. One may ask why a famine in the beginning of the apostolic congregation's movement of the Nazarene Creed. Did they not get sufficient corn? True, yes, but they got it from the great storehouse, the Bible, in the same way as the Egyptians received their corn in the years of famine, from the immense storehouse at the hand of the Joseph, see pages 15-18. Egyptians taught to the Gentiles. For the 7 years of the famine began when Yahshua came to Pharaoh for bread, and Pharaoh told all the Egyptians, go unto Joseph. What he saith unto you do, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians. Genesis 41:55-56. Well, the Egyptians represent the Gentiles, and so there you have it. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the corn which they bought, and Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. And when money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of the Canaan, all the Egyptians came unto Joseph and said, give us bread, for why should we die in thy presence? For the money faileth, and they brought their cattle unto Joseph. And Joseph gave them bread in exchange for horses, and for the flocks, and for the cattle of the herd, and for the asses. And he fed them with the bread for all their cattle for that year. When that year was ended, they came unto him the second year, and said unto him, we will not hide it from my master, how that our money is spent. My master hath also our herds of cattle. There is not aught left in the sight of my master but our bodies and our land. Wherefore shall we die before thine eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for bread, and we and our land will be servants unto Pharaoh. And Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for the Egyptians sold every man his field, and they said, thou hast saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my master, and we will be Pharaoh's servants. Genesis 47:14-25. In the beginning of the famine, the Egyptians went unto Pharaoh for corn instead unto Joseph, for they were well acquainted with Joseph, for he had been a governor of Egypt for 8 years. Or more. Joseph rode over all the land of Egypt, and every Egyptian bowed down unto him. During the years of plenty, it was Joseph who bought the corn from the Egyptians, and it seemed strange that they should go unto Pharaoh. It must have been by the divine providence that they came unto him. It has been explained that Pharaoh represented the church organization or leadership. The Egyptians cannot represent anything else but the Gentiles and the time and the days of the apostles. For the Gentiles came unto the church Pharaoh, where they were told to go to Joseph, Yahshua. In other words, they came to the Pharisees, so to speak. But now that first Pharaoh that Joseph was under was a good Pharaoh. But the last Pharaoh that wouldn't let Egypt go was a bad Pharaoh. So he didn't represent Yahweh. Is that first Pharaoh that represented Yahweh. What he saith unto you do, that is, the church in her purity without one strange thing in their midst, directed the Gentiles unto Yahshua as their life giver, as Pharaoh directed the Egyptians unto Joseph. Okay. The Egyptians sold themselves to Pharaoh. We're on page 71, Shepherd Rod, Volume 1. And it says, and Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. For the Egyptians sold every man his field. Because the famine prevailed over them, so the land became Pharaoh's. Genesis 47:20. In the preceding verses of the chapter, we read the Egyptians spent all their money for corn, and when the money was gone, they gave the cattle in exchange, and when the cattle were gone, they gave their land, and when the land was gone, they sold themselves and became servants unto Pharaoh. This is a type. But of the fulfillment of this type, we read in the following text, and the multitude of them that believed were of one heart and of one soul, neither said any of them that all other things which he possessed was his own, but they had all things common, and with great power gave the apostles witness of the resurrection of Yahshua Messiah, and great grace upon them all. Neither was there any among them that lacked, for as many as were possessors of the lands or houses sold them, and brought the prices of the things that were sold, and laid them down at the apostles' feet. And Joseph, who by the apostles, the surname Barnabas, a Levite, having a land, sold it, and brought the money, and laid it at the apostles' feet. Acts 4:32-37. Thus Jew and Gentile sold all houses and land, and brought the prices, and laid them at the apostles' feet, and became servants unto the church, parentheses, Pharaoh. Again we read Acts 5:1-10. But a certain man named Ananias, with Sapphira's wife, sold his possession, and kept back part of the price, his wife also being privy unto it, and brought a certain part, and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled thine heart to lie unto the Holy Spirit, and keep back part of the price of the land? And Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and gave up the spirit. Thus any who pretended to sell and held back part of the price received in the days of the apostles died just as those who would not sell all unto Pharaoh in Egypt. Yahshua said, sell all and follow me. Therefore, Tot met Anatot. Joseph removed people throughout Egypt, and Joseph brought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. And as for the people, he removed them to the cities from one end of the borders of Egypt, even unto the other end, and thereof, other end thereof, Genesis 47. Part of the verse 20-21. This is the type. Following is the fulfillment of the type of Acts 8:1. And Saul was consenting unto his, Stephen's, death. And at that time there was a great persecution against the church, which was at Jerusalem. They were all scattered abroad throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles. It will be noticed that the apostles were at home. Jerusalem, and there is no record where the apostles sold their land. Now we quote the type of the latter, Genesis 47:22. Only the land of the priests bought he not, for the priests had a portion assigned them of Pharaoh, and did eat their portion which the Pharaoh gave them. Wherefore they sold not their land. It is remarkable to note how this coincides unto the smallest details. 70 souls type of organization. This is our next topic. Israel arrived in Egypt in the second year of the famine, Genesis 45:10-11. And thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen, and thou shalt be near unto me, thou and thy children, and thy children's children, and thy flocks, and thy herds, and all that thou hast, and there's will I nourish thee, for yet there are 5 years of famine, this thou and thy household and all that thou hast come to poverty. The arrival of Israel in Egypt stands for some symbol in which there must be a lesson. Note that this lesson cannot be for the early part of the apostolic congregation, for Israel came in the second year of famine. The lesson, then, intended here is for a latter period of the history, a latter period in the history of the church. If we are to know the truth of the incident and the lesson intended to be derived from it, reference must here be made to the number of the souls which entered into the Egypt, and the sons of the Joseph which were born him in Egypt were 2 souls. All the souls of the house of Jacob which came into Egypt were 70. Genesis 46:27. That means 70 souls. For the scripture says all the souls who came into Egypt were 70 in number. If we can in some way find the meaning of the number, then we shall understand the lesson. When Moses, with the children of Israel, came to Sinai, he organized a church there, and organized and selected 70 elders. This same organization years later crossed the Jordan and went into the Promised Land. There they had the Sanhedrin, which was composed of the 70 men. Thus, the number 70 is a symbol of the church organization. The meaning, then, is that there will be a church organization sometime in the history of A.D. If this is true, then the church which Yahshua, with the apostles, organized must disband and of necessity be reorganized. This is true, for the Christian church was disorganized in the Dark Ages during the time of the beginning of the papal rule. When again organized, it would partially fulfill Joel 2:32, and in the remnant whom Yahweh shall call. For the 2300 days or years of the Daniel prophecy in the 8th chapter gives us the entire truth of the church history until 1844, until which time there was no call for the reorganization. There had been, or if this call for the reorganization had met its fulfillment before 1844, then Daniel's prophecy would have made mention of it. As the prophecy is silent, and there has no prophet Yahweh risen since the church fell into papal power about AD 538 to 1844, then the truth of the symbol was yet in the future. As the prophetic period ended in 1844, the most holiest place and the heavenly sanctuary was open, into which Yahshua entered. If this incident marked the beginning of the atonement, there would have been no better or more opportune time for a call from the heaven than at the end of the great prophetic period. For the day of the atonement being the most solemn time for the church, Seventh-day Adventists were called out by a prophet and are practically the only people who believe in the 2300 days. We are the only people who have proclaimed it since the 1844 and are now in the atonement or the time of the judgment. The test for this is here quoted, and I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and unto every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, fear Yahweh and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come. And worship him that made the heaven and the earth and the sea and the fountains of waters, Revelation 14:6-7. Seventh-day Adventists only can fulfill the type, for just at this time they were called by the prophet of Yahweh to organize as a denomination and to proclaim the glad news, this gospel in all the world and this generation. Thus the symbol 70 made its fulfillment at that time. Still another thought on the experience of Israel. When Joseph's brethren came into Egypt, they were directly they went directly unto him for corn. And Joseph's brethren came and bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. Genesis 42:6. For the sons of Jacob were strangers in the land and knew not their brother who was a governor. They providentially came not unto Pharaoh, as the Egyptians did, for corn, but directly unto the right person. Joseph, in contrast to this, the Egyptians, who should have known better, being acquainted with the rule of their country, went unto Pharaoh for corn. But their king had told them to go to Joseph. What he saith unto you do, for the Egyptians must have known Joseph, being their governor, for more than 8 years by that time. In the 7 years of plenty, it was Joseph unto whom they sold the food, which he preserved for the time of famine. Joseph rode in Pharaoh's chariot over all the land of Egypt. And all the Egyptians bowed down to him, thus it would have been impossible for them to be ignorant of him. This being a symbol, it can only find its fulfillment in the following narrative. The Egyptians, Gentiles, went to Pharaoh, leadership of the apostolic congregation for corn. The apostles directed the Gentiles, converts, to Yahshua as Pharaoh directed the Egyptians to Joseph, saying, go unto Joseph. What he said then you do. If this is the meaning we get from the Egyptians going to Pharaoh, than the significance of the sons of Jacob going directly unto Joseph means that when that church is reorganized, the people would have to go directly to Yahshua, Joseph. The lesson intended is that in the beginning of the church in 1845, which had no true leadership Pharaoh to go to, they of necessity went directly to Yahshua as the sons of Jacob came under Joseph. Jacob, type of James. Seventh-day Adventist Church, which came into existence in 1845, became Israel, the movement from which the true Israel of the 144,000 are made. It will be noticed that the names of the fathers after the flesh and by the promise coincide. For the father's name of Israel after the flesh was Jacob. So is the name of the father of Israel by the promise, Seventh-day Adventist movement. But one may say it was Jacob in the former and James White in the latter. True it is, but the names Jacob and James are the same. Again, the first... very first vision Sister White had was about 144,000, and the aim of this denomination has been to make that number. The land of Goshen. The beginning of this denomination was typified by Israel's entrance into the Egypt, as previously explained. We shall now consider the truth of the land of Goshen. For the Joseph brought Israel into Egypt and gave them that part of the land to dwell in, which was the best land in the country of Egypt. And there Joseph nourished them, their flocks, herds, and cattle, and all they had. See Genesis 45:10. For the land of Goshen stands as a symbol of the United States of America, in which the church came into existence. While our country is productive, like the land of Goshen, the richest in the world and a prosperous nation, it is the best for missionary work, for it is made up of all the nations, and therefore, like the land of Goshen, the most productive in Egypt, the world. Joseph nourished Israel. In the beginning of the 7 years of famine, the Egyptians sold all and became servants unto Pharaoh, which has reference to the apostles, church, and other Gentiles, then, who sold their houses and lands and had all things in common, as previously explained. But Israel did not sell any of their possessions, nor did they pay for the food with which Joseph nourished them. Israel then represents the church now, in the beginning of the church in 1845, Yahshua, parentheses, Joseph, opened the storehouse and gave us all the truth corn we could possibly assimilate. Is it not a fact that no other people at any time in the history of the church have received as much truth as Yahweh has given us in our time? Line upon line, precept upon precept, instruction upon instruction have been given us so that we as a people may no one understand the ways of Yahweh, obey His voice, keep His charge, commandments, statutes, and laws, thus becoming the children of Abraham and heirs according to the promise. When this is realized in the hearts of men, then they will fulfill the charge given unto Peter. Peter said, Thou knowest I love thee. Yahshua saith unto him, Feed my sheep. Shepherds. And Pharaoh said unto his brethren, Joseph, what is your occupation? And they said unto Pharaoh, Thy servants are shepherds, both we and also our fathers. Genesis 47:3. Israel were shepherds, which is a symbol of the missionaries, such as feed the lambs of Yahweh. In the early part of the church, the byword was every Seventh-day Adventist a missionary and every missionary a preacher. It ought to be so now. For the great struggle has not been between religion and no religion, it is between Yahweh's religion and man's religion, revealed here, January 23, 1930. Another Pharaoh arose. Now there arose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph, Exodus 1:8. If the first Pharaoh, who exalted Joseph, Yahshua, represented the leadership in the days of the apostles, then this new Pharaoh must represent the leadership of this present movement at the time this subject became known. Note, this new Pharaoh knew not Joseph, Yahshua. The meaning is that the leadership of this organization has left following their master, Yahshua. Volume 5, page 217. Grievous and presumptuous sins have dwelt among us, and yet the general opinion is that the church is flourishing and that peace and spiritual prosperity are in all her borders. The church has turned back from following Yahshua, her leader, and is steadily retreating toward Egypt. Yet few are alarmed or astonished at their want of the spiritual power. Doubt and even disbelief of the testimony of the Spirit of Yahweh is leavening our churches everywhere. Satan would have it thus. The testimonies are unread and unappreciated. Further explanation of the Pharaoh being tops is given on the last page of this section. Taskmasters. Now there rose up a new king over Egypt which knew not Joseph, and he said unto the people, Behold, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Therefore they did sit over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burden. And they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramesses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with a rigor, and they made their lives bitter with the hard bondage, in mortar and in brick and in all manner of service in the field. Exodus 1:8-13. The children of Israel said, Pharaoh are too strong and mightier than we. Let us deal wisely and reduce their strength. So they, Israelites, were drafted from the sheepfold to the brickyards and the field. But this did not reduce their strength, said Pharaoh. Let us set taskmasters over them to wear them out. Note the application. Pharaoh is the king, the one who rules. The taskmasters in this case could be none other than a class of ministers referred to in the volume 5, page 217. Doubt and even disbelief of the testimonies of the Spirit of Yahweh is living in our churches everywhere. Satan would have it thus. Ministers who preach self instead of Yahshua would have it thus. Testimonies are unread and unappreciated. No longer is the byword of Seventh-day Adventist every Seventh-day Adventist a missionary, every missionary a preacher, as what it used to be. But now, but how much per capita, or have you made your budget, instead of have you brought any souls to Yahshua? Are your church members nearer unto him? It is not meant here that Christians ought not to give for the support of the cause. We ought to give, and give more liberally than we have given in the past. But our gifts ought to come from a willing heart and not from the result of lashes. The people should be fed with the spiritual food so that they would feel the need of giving without overbearing on the subject. And Moses was about to build a sanctuary in the wilderness. Yahweh commanded him, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel that they bring me an offering of every man that giveth it willingly with his heart. Ye shall take my offering. Moses was commanded to take offerings only from those who willingly gave their heart. We are told by the Spirit of prophecy that they gave from the heart. That ministers should not put all their efforts and time with the church. Members are not to expect a sermon every Sabbath. Ministers should rather engage themselves in the working for outsiders. Read Volume 9, pages 140. Have we taken heed to this instruction? For example, we have scores of ministers in Los Angeles and the immediate vicinity. But how many public efforts have we? It was announced just a short time ago that there were only two. Thus it has been for some years. What are these ministers doing day after day and week after week? It seems they are doing nothing but preparing a sermon during 6 days of the week to preach on Sabbath, and then it is either something to sell or some particular budget to raise. How many sermons preached do we read in the scriptures urging people to give money or to buy something to support the cause? Not one. We have proved the house of Yahweh with the merchandise even on Sabbath morning, which hour is dedicated as a day of the rest to worship Yahweh, Volume 1, page 471 and 2, A great mistake has been made by some who profess present truth by the introducing of the merchandise in the course of a series of the meetings, and by the traffic diverting minds from the object of the meetings. If the Yahshua were now upon the earth, he would drive out these peddlers and traffickers, whether they be ministers or people, with a scourge of the small cords, as when he entered the temple anciently, for the ministers have stood in the desk, and preached a most solemn discourse, and then by the introduction of the merchandise and acting the part of a salesman, even in the house of Yahweh, they have diverted the minds of their hearers from the impressions received, and destroyed the fruit of their labor, for their time and strength should be held in reserve, that their efforts may be thorough in a series of the meetings. Their time and strength should not be drawn upon the seller of books, when they can be properly brought before the public by those who have not the burden of the preaching of the word, coal porters. It is written, my house shall be called a house of prayer, that you have made a den of thieves. These traffickers might have pleaded as an excuse that the articles they held for sale were for sacrificial offering, but the object was to get gain, to obtain means, to accumulate. Volume 1, page 472. Okay, our conference is not ignorant of the instructions here given, and the evil which is practiced in the churches at the Autumn Council held in Milwaukee, Wisconsin in 1923, where the question of the book sales on the Sabbath day was brought forth in the connection with other matters, and the following resolution was passed and published that all campaigns for the promotion of the periodicals or book sales on the Sabbath day be eliminated, and that those responsible for the promotion of these campaigns be directed to the method of the house-to-house solicitation by the visiting committees in the connection with the campaigns for the literature sale, that we invite our publishing houses to exercise caution, circularizing our people on behalf of the publishing house project, and to refrain from the sending unto the church officers matters to be presented on the Sabbath with the previous arrangement with the local union and general conferences, Milwaukee Autumn Council, October 9, 1923. Review and herald of November 22, 1923. Read volume 9, page 260. For we read in the testimonies under ministers, page 477. For a strange thing has come into our churches. Men who are placed in the positions of responsibility, that they may be wise helpers under their fellow workers, have come to suppose that they were set as kings and rulers in the churches, to say to one another, do this, and to another, do that, and to another, be sure to labor in such and such a way. Thus Pharaoh has drafted the people from the sheepfold to the brickyards of the field, for the taskmasters, being commanded to oversee the work, urged the bricks' budgets and wear out the people. For the existing sins in the church are passed over and no one cares. Those who do reprove wrongs incur the displeasure. In volume 3, page 266. Speaking of the condition in the church at the time of the sitting, marking 144,000 and the slaughter of the church, we read, those who have excused these wrongs have been thought by the people to be very amiable and lovely in the disposition simply because they shun the discharge of a plain scriptural duty. The task was not agreeable unto their feeling, therefore they avoided it. Okay. That brings us in our steps. This is our contact. This is the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on the audio archives. Hear this message anymore. We're going to close now with a song.
Our servant risen Savior is in the world today. I know that he is living, whatever men may say. I see his hand of mercy, I hear his voice of cheer. And just the time I need him, he's always near. He lives, Yahshua lives today. He walks with me and talks with me along life's narrow way. He lives, delay, salvation to impart. You ask me how I know He lives. He lives within my heart. And all the world around me, I see His loving care. And though my heart grows weary, I never will despair. I know that He is leading through all the stormy blasts. The day of His appearing will come at last. He lives, Yahshua lives today. He walks with me and talks with me along the narrow way. He lives, salvation to impart. He lets me how I know He lives. He lives within my heart. Rejoice, rejoice, O Christian, lift up your voice and sing. Eternal hallelujah to Yahshua the King. The hope of all who seek Him, the help of all who find. None other is so loving, so good and kind. He lives, Yahshua lives today. He walks with me and talks with me the long-lasting way. He walks with me and talks with me the long-lasting way. He lives, salvation to impart.